Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and PT pearls to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
Coming up next is our next guest, Tyler Jean, who is a student of naturopathic medicine and somebody who I kind of met through the Food Network online. He's on Instagram at functional.foods, and you're going to want to check out his profile because he is just a master educator in what food and nutrition and diet can do for our body. He's somebody who became passionate about this field and just about naturopathic medicine when he realized in our country, we like to just cover up a lot of the end symptoms. And he loves to dig in and get to those root causes and the things that actually might be causing different symptoms and different things in our body. He has so much information and he breaks it down in a way that is going to be understandable for you. So listen up on how you can optimize some of these dietary, nutrition, or food things in your life. All right. So we're so excited to have a good friend of mine, Tyler Jean, on. He is a student of naturopathic medicine, and you can find him online at Instagram at Functional Foods. He has some amazing information on there if you want to start looking at that while we're on. But thanks so much for being on this morning with us, Tyler.
Dom and Jen, it's a pleasure to be here, and thank you for having me.
Always so good to, you know, be able to chat with some really smart people. But one of the first things I'm so curious about is why you decided to go down the path of studying naturopathic medicine rather than MD.
Yeah. So for those that are not familiar with what naturopathic medicine is, it is a four-year medical school program based in the sciences, but also takes a very integrative, holistic, and preventative approach to medicine. And something that really resonated with me when it came to pursuing a career in medicine is, you know, looking at the body as a whole. And again, taking this more preventative and proactive approach that took into account dietary and lifestyle changes and how they can play a foundational role in our ability to cultivate health. And I think oftentimes, you know, when we talk about disease and the disease model and medicine and health, we're often looking at, you know, the pathophysiology of disease and studying the body when it's out of balance, as opposed to how can we actually cultivate health on a daily basis to be well. You know, we were having a conversation earlier too about what does it actually mean to be healthy? And I truly believe that health is more than the absence of disease, but more of this vibrant state of health and vitality. We are all energetic beings. And if you are in a room with someone else, like you can feel that energy and that liveliness that someone else, you know, is giving off. And so for me, when it was choosing a career, I wanted to do something that I wholeheartedly believed in. And one of the things that I love about naturopathic medicine, and it's one of the principles that most resonates with me, is the Latin word docere, which means doctor as teacher. And I firmly believe that practitioners and physicians have this unique opportunity to not only be educators and mentors, but empower other people to take self-responsibility for their health. And I do see now that I'm in my rotations in my last year of school and starting to work with patients in a one-on-one setting, that true healing really occurs in between doctor's visits. It's not in the doctor's visits. And I think that people need knowledge and education and empowerment and coaches to really give them those tools so that they can feel competent when they're going into their doctor's office, but are able to cultivate a sense of health. And so that was something that, you know, was important for me and that I resonate so deeply with in terms of this profession, and that we have such a large toolkit to help our patients. Oftentimes you look at allopathic medicine, so, you know, MDDO, they're kind of tied to mostly surgical intervention and pharmaceutical intervention, where in naturopathic medicine, not only can we prescribe pharmaceuticals, but we also are well-versed in clinical nutrition, homeopathy, hydrotherapy, herbal botanical medicine, physical medicine, and so many other tools. So it just gives us a lot more to work with and be able to meet the patient where they're at, wherever they're at in their health journey.
That's so fantastic. Jen and I are over here like snapping and clapping in the background because, I mean, just the one thing you said about the practitioner as the teacher, and how the things happen between the doctor's visits, I think is really important for people to continue to hear. Because regardless of what type of practitioner you're going to, if you're in your mind, you're going there so they can do things to you, how do we start to flip that mindset? And I think in the world of, like you said, allopathic medicine, or where the bulk or the majority of our system has evolved, even providers like myself or like Jen, we start getting into this field and we're like, hey, this isn't really exactly what we were hoping for. You know, we wanted to do this so we could help people optimize the way they lived and become stronger, more able, more vibrant human beings, kind of like you said, not just prevent sickness, or not even prevent sickness, you know, help rehab back from sickness and injury. So how do we start to get things to shift, you know, at large in the whole system? You know, in your world of naturopathic medicine, they might practice this way, but we got a bigger thing going on here in our country.
Yeah, we really do. You know, I've thought about this, and I really think the first place to start is awareness. Because how can you start to put your attention and your energy into something that you're not even aware of? And so I think it's awareness, and it comes with education and knowledge. And I think that's the first place to start. And I think that's what inspired me to come to social media and start on Instagram, where I just do a lot of education around, you know, what does it mean to be healthy, and looking at root cause solutions to a lot of these complex chronic illnesses that maybe Western medicine doesn't have answers to. And it gives people a different perspective in the way that they look at their body, and that the body in all of its complexity really has this inherent self capacity to heal and regenerate when you remove the offending factors and you give your body the raw materials and raw nutrients that it needs to heal. And when you do that, you put your body in a position to recover. And I think it's such a beautiful thought process to think that the body really is intelligent and has this capacity to self-heal if we give it what it needs. And oftentimes we're not, you know, we're stressed, we're depriving ourselves of sleep, we're eating a nutrient devoid diet, and we're eating out of convenience. I think at this time, it seems that we're so connected through social media, but yet at the same time, I think we're dealing with an epidemic of isolation and loneliness. And you think about movement and exercise and how these are foundational pillars to health. And when you neglect those pillars, you don't have a strong foundation to build health upon. So I think it starts with the education, the access to these resources, and having people understand why these are important, and how by making these simple foundational shifts, it can make a profound impact on not only your quality of life, but, you know, improve health outcomes as well. So, you know, really, I think it starts with that education, that empowerment, and in a way, being a model for other people, a role model, and leading by example. Because I remember early in my health journey, you know, well-intentioned, but like wanting to help family members and friends and trying to tell them what to do and what not to do. And as you, I don't know if you have this experience, it doesn't necessarily go well when people are, you know, they don't like to be told what to do. So it's like the only thing you can do is lead by example and hope that it inspires other people to start to make little changes. And I think acknowledge and recognize that every person is at a different place in their health journey. And you have to meet that person where they're at, and also realize maybe you aspire to be like someone else and they really motivate you to be a healthier version of yourself. But recognizing that that person has probably spent a significant amount of time to get to where they are. So you can't compare yourself to someone that has maybe been in the game 5, 6, 10, or, you know, 20 years. So just recognizing that we're all on this journey together. And I think just staying open-minded to new ideas, and by being open-minded to learning new things, that you can make a lot of changes when it comes to your health and vitality.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely 100% agree. And especially as you, like how you approach people, because I think Dom and I are known, you know, for kind of going, at least in my house, going into a family thing, and everyone's like, oh, they're going to say something about this food or something about, we're going to tell them something else. And it's just, it's like a joke, but it is, you know, the only thing that we can do is the way that we show up, and hopefully, you know, start to create change that way. And one of the things that kind of like irks me, and I know Dom has heard this as well, is when we're around people who have worked in a hospital setting, a traditional hospital setting, and they just say, people are lazy. At the end of the day, people are lazy. They don't want to do it. And it's hard, because it's like, we've created this though. We've created this system. So how do we we even get people to think, no, people aren't inherently lazy. We've just taught them to be that way, or taught them to rely on systems in a, you know, not an optimal way. So how do we start to, you know, even shift that conversation?
Yeah, I think an unpopular truth is that we are fully accountable and responsible for our health. And I think that's a big truth to swallow. And I think, you know, too many people trash their bodies, unfortunately, with this expectation that they can just allopathically suppress and eliminate their symptoms by, you know, seeing a doctor. You go and see the doctor, and the doctor is going to treat you. They're going to fix your issues, as opposed to taking responsibility for your health and realizing that health is dynamic. And most ingredients for health are free, but you have to be willing to put in the work. And so, yes, on one aspect, I can see where people say people are lazy, but I think it also is lack of awareness, right? And so if you're not aware, as we kind of alluded to earlier, of how maybe, you know, drinking tap water could be, you know, contributing to ill health, or, you know, how eating a standard American diet could be setting you up for metabolic syndrome and chronic inflammation. If you're not aware, then why would you even be motivated to make change? So I think it starts with awareness and then that education, which I think is such an important piece. But then I, you know, recognizing that there's limitations to knowledge, because I think the next step is execution. And a lot of people, you know, you get trapped in these habits in our subconscious mind that have just become habitual. And so it's really hard to transition and make those changes. And I see a lot of people get stuck, either because they need accountability, they need the coach, or it's just overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think it's easier to just kind of lay back on these habits we've developed instead of making change, because also it's clunky, it's uncomfortable to make change. And sometimes it can be discouraging. And there's this aspect of being afraid to fail. And something, I was a Division I athlete, I swam for 15 years. And one of the biggest lessons I learned from athletics was not being afraid to fail, and to fail hard, only to get back up and approach it from a different light, to figure out what works for me. And so I think, you know, there's beauty in that, but I know a lot of people are afraid to fail and put themselves out there in the first place. So I think giving ourselves grace and, you know, giving ourselves permission to try and to fail, and that, you know, even if you do fail, you're not starting from scratch, you're starting from experience. And I think there's so much wisdom to gain from that experience. And whether that is a, you know, dietary change, or this health journey that you're on, or maybe you're embarking on a, you know, a spirituality and mindfulness based practice, start somewhere, start small, and realize that it is, you have to show up daily, and it's a consistent practice. And I think by doing that, you're going to spark little changes that motivate you to make bigger changes over time. And I just challenge people to try to start small, and be consistent. And I think it can really make a profound difference in your health and your quality of life.
Yeah. And I think that that kind of takes me back to the thing you said about, okay, things happen between the doctor's appointments. And when you're at the doctor's or the provider's appointment, that's when the realization and the awareness might be developed. And that's where, as the provider, when normally think about the environment that somebody may have been in their medical journey, and then they get with you, you're one, demonstrating great health in your own body. But then if you just know how to ask the right questions to motivate that person towards the things that they're excited about in life, towards the things that they have done in their life that they love, the things that they've eaten that they love, that's what we need to give people, where they can make those realizations so that they're excited to go out and make the shit happen between the doctor's appointments.
Yes, absolutely. Or even just recognizing the limitations of the time that physicians also have with their patients. And typically, people are going to see their doctor that is within their insurance network. And with the insurance model, you only have, you know, 15 to 30 minutes, if you're lucky, with your doctor to really, you know, assess out these kind of complex things. And oftentimes you go and see your doctor, you don't have just one chief complaint, you have four or five. So you're told, okay, like, let's just focus on one or two today. And how, you know, when you're trying to, you know, treat something that's already manifest and developed, it's hard to, you know, really educate your patient and kind of focus on this aspect of prevention and human optimization when there's already a lot of complex things going on. And so just recognizing that limitation that even if you are passionate about teaching and you have all these resources and tools to help your patient, like there's limitations with the medical model and with the time. And that's again, why I think that there's so much healing that can occur between doctor's visits and that the doctor really just facilitating and providing tools, but ultimately it's kind of taking the self-responsibility that I can heal, but at large, it's up to me. The doctor's not going to heal me. It's up to me. And like, you know, connecting with other people and creating this close-knit circle to be accountable so that you can start to implement these changes. Because again, kind of going back to that piece of, you know, making change, it's difficult. You kind of resist it because it's uncomfortable and it's clunky. And so I see like that's where I think we can get the most success is when we, you know, educate, we create community. I think community is so important, especially as a pillar to health. And so that again is where I even see myself moving forward, graduating in 9 months and kind of like, what is my role as a physician once I graduate? Thinking more about how I can provide more resources and tools for people in that transition phase and the, you know, time in between doctor's visits.
I love that. Now I'm curious because I'm sure a lot of people wonder, you know, when would someone go see a naturopathic doctor as opposed to, you know, like you said, going to their primary where it's in within network and is naturopathic medicine in covered by insurance?
Yeah. So with naturopathic medicine, we typically go by the credentials because people often ask, what is your credentials? Are you an MD or a DO? We're an ND, so naturopathic doctor. You may also see the credentials NMD, naturopathic medical doctor. Those are all regulated credentials that you may see either on social media or when you are searching for a naturopathic doctor. But currently, there's only 26 states in the continental U.S. that have licensure for naturopathic medicine where they can practice medicine with a license. And, you know, depending on the state, you know, is going to dictate the scope of practice in which that ND can practice medicine. So in the states of Washington, the states of Oregon, which is where I am, and the states of Arizona, we actually have a very large scope of practice. And we are also considered primary care. Mm. And we also accept, I believe it's Medicaid is state-based as opposed to federal, which is Medicare. So we can accept Medicaid. But again, it's going to depend on the state. And I would say that a lot of the states that have legislation for naturopathic medicine are on the West Coast, again, more progressive and thinking about integrative and holistic and preventive medicine. And we're trying to make that move to making it more accessible for people in the Midwest and the Southeast. So, I, you know, oftentimes you may hear like this push to get recognition to all 50 states. And once you get, you know, upwards of 2/3 of the continental U.S. to kind of, you know, push for legislation, then it kind of just all happens rapidly. And I think in the next 5 years, we're going to be kind of pushing to more, you know, federal recognition of naturopathic medicine and having more access to care. Now, who would see an ND and who should just go see a medical doctor? And so, you know, when I first started my medical journey, I was like, NDs are the best form of healthcare. And, you know, medical doctors and doctors of osteopathic medicine, you know, largely ignore lifestyle interventions and nutrition. And it's all a band-aid blanket based approach to medicine where they're just masking symptoms. And through this journey, it's been humbling because I acknowledge and recognize the need and the utilization of pharmaceutical medication as well as surgery. There's a time and place for it. But I think where naturopathic medical doctors really shine, and even the field and realm of functional medicine where there's a lot of overlap, is when people are dealing with complex chronic disease or chronic disease in general, which is, you know, what I think a lot of people struggle with this day and age. You think about maybe PCOS or endometriosis, or you think about diabetes, you think about Alzheimer's or Parkinson's and any type of autoimmune condition, Hashimoto's disease, a type of autoimmune thyroid condition. A lot of these more chronic diseases where oftentimes you go and see your medical doctor, they're going to just try to prescribe you a pill that will help to manage and or suppress symptoms. And you're told that you have to be on it for life. Also think about something like GERD. Omeprazole or proton pump inhibitors are one of the most commonly prescribed medications in the entire world. And oftentimes there are root causes to why you have heartburn or reflux that you got to explore. And so what I really love about naturopathic medicine is you have to put your detective cap on, employ critical thinking, and really think about where are these imbalances or what are these disturbing factors that are contributing to the set of symptoms that this person is experiencing. So I think, you know, if you are going in with like a UTI or you have contracted an STI from a partner, or, you know, maybe you have, you know, some of these acute base illnesses, I think it's great to have your medical doctor on board. But, you know, even naturopathic doctors, I think, are very well equipped, and they can also educate on how to prevent some of these things. Because maybe you are getting frequent UTIs and a woman wants to know, why am I more susceptible? And you can actually educate your patient on that to prevent, you know, the reoccurrence, and even provide other options so that the patient really has true informed consent. Because oftentimes, standard of care is just presenting with an antibiotic, and that is your only option. Or it's a type of watch and wait to see if it gets more severe. In naturopathic medicine, again, we can look at, you know, how has the flora in the vaginal tract changed to make this person more susceptible to a UTI? How could we potentially use herbs that have antimicrobial properties and demulcent properties and astringent properties that can actually work to tonify the tissue, but also to help treat that condition and just give people more options so that that person doesn't feel like their hands are tied behind their back and that they can choose what is best for them, right? Because I think ultimately people want options and they want to feel empowered and have medical autonomy to choose what's best for them. And so that's what I love about naturopathic medicine is the education, the prevention, and just that we have such a large tool to cater to our patients. And for some patients, they may want the pharmaceutical drug. No shame, no judgment. Every person is going to have a different preference or affinity for certain things. But I will say that a lot of people that go and see NDs or naturopathic doctors are told that, you know, there's no other answer for their chronic complex answer or their chronic illness. And they want other solutions and they want other options. And maybe they want more of a natural, holistic approach to their healing journey. So I know that was a long-winded answer, but, you know, I think that's kind of the delegation. But, you know, if you have an acute injury or you need surgery, you tear your meniscus, like you better believe that, you know, I'm going to go and see my medical doctor. But I think it's creating your own personalized care team where maybe you have your medical doctor, you have your ND, you have your energy healer, you have your chiropractor, you have your PT to create your own unique care team that can cater to you.
Get out of your silo. That's what I'm hearing. And I think that that's huge because how we constructed our system basically was a bunch of these providers trying to become the best and the smartest, the fastest so that they could claim control over the health of our country. And in reality, what you just laid out is people like options. People like information. They like different information because then they can understand and feel what they resonate with most and the person that they resonate with the most and the way that it was explained to them. So I love you presenting this naturopathic, you know, doctor as another option to go and look for options or solutions or things for your specific path that you may not have found at this point. And I think we're in a really cool point in our country where the access is going to be able to start increasing to these different providers so people can start to construct their own health teams. I think something, of course, that you do amazingly that we want to dive into on Instagram and just in general with the way you educate patients is food and nutrition and diet. And something you really focus a lot on is the anti-inflammatory diet. And I think that that's kind of one of those buzz phrases where everyone says like, oh, that's inflammatory for me, or oh, that's inflammatory. So like, what the heck is an anti-inflammatory diet in your opinion?
Yeah, well, we talked about some of these foundations to health at the beginning of this podcast. And one of those foundational pillars to health is food. And there's a lot to unpack around food. But I think for the general person, if they're looking at how can I make dietary changes that are going to favorably improve my quality of health and reduce the amount of inflammation that is going on in my diet, I think, you know, that is going to come back to this aspect of eating more wholesome, nutrient-dense foods that are loaded with vitamins and minerals and essential fats and these phytochemicals that you're going to find in brightly colored fruits, vegetables, and a lot of plant matter that incorporates a lot of diversity. And and moving away from eating more of this, what we call standard American diet, that is more rich in hyper-palatable, processed and packaged convenient foods, and really is nutrient devoid, and is also, you know, high in, you know, fried and fried foods, as well as not even considering the quality of the foods too. So I think it's an approach that is, you know, thinking about the quality as well as the nutrient density of a meal and how you can incorporate just more wholesome foods in general. I think that's just a blanket place to start. But recognizing that, you know, with nutrition, I've been on this, you know, nutrition journey and kind of this mission to figure out what is the best diet for everyone. There has to be a best diet, right? And you may hear that there's paleo or keto or vegan or carnivore is trending now. And so like, there's so much noise, it can get so dogmatic. So what is the best diet? And say that, again, it comes back to those principles we were talking about, just eating more wholesome, unadulterated, nutrient-dense food, but also honoring your unique biochemical individuality. So what works for one person may not work for another, and that acknowledging and honoring that certain people respond differently to certain foods. And so, you know, I think it's important to take that into account by incorporating more wholesome, nutrient-dense foods that is more centered around maybe a plant-centric approach that incorporates all these antioxidants and polyphenols that have these biologically active constituents that are going to favorably, you know, modulate the healing response. You're going to put your body again in a position to heal and removing some of these more inflammatory factors that could be contributing to ill health. Because inflammation is a big buzzword we hear about. And I'm sure you guys talk about inflammation as it pertains to muscle soreness and stiffness and, you know, body aches and myalgias. But also, you know, inflammation is this, you know, kind of like catch-all root cause of all diseases. If you study any disease model, there's excess inflammation. So what is inflammation? It's not really a disease. It's a response from your immune system that is signaling that something is wrong. It's an adaptive response, honestly. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword. We don't want too much inflammation because it can drive more of this disease pathophysiology, but we don't want too little either. Because you need a properly functioning immune system in order to fight cancer and in order to fight off infection. So again, how can you find that happy medium? And if there is too much inflammation, asking why. Why is that inflammation there? Food can be one of those contributing factors, as we kind of talked about. But also things like, you know, smoking. Cigarettes are going to contribute to a lot of inflammation. Radiation. Environmental pollutants in our environment. Again, a lot more of these refined grains and sugars and fried foods in our environment. So to answer that question, what is an anti-inflammatory diet? It's removing some of these more common foods that can be allergenic and inflammatory, like the refined grains and sugars, the fried foods, some of these more common foods that may be incompatible with people are things like gluten, dairy, eggs, corn, peanuts and shellfish. But it's also incorporating more nutrient density in whole foods. So, you know, anti-inflammatory, removing those offending factors, and then giving your body a lot more of that nourishment, whole foods.
There's just a lot of noise, as you know, out in the world, especially on social media, in terms of what is inflammatory, what is not, what should people be avoiding, and what people should be able to eat and have no problems. And dairy, I feel like it goes back and forth, especially with women. Any thoughts in terms of, is it inflammatory? Is it something that we can say for sure? Or is it, again, just individual based on each person?
Yeah. And so I love kind of talking about these nuances and who would it be right for and who it may not be right for. So as it pertains to dairy, dairy is very, you know, hotly debated all the time. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it inflammatory? Is it carcinogenic? You know, even people will talk about, you know, mortality as it relates to dairy and is it going to kill you? And I think some of these are kind of extremist claims, and a lot of the data that we have to look at are epidemiological studies. These are observational studies that are not as high on the totem pole when we're looking at quality of evidence. But what are some of these truths? Because sometimes it may be more these like half truths, but just to kind of like break down dairy is one of the most common allergenic foods, and allergies are a immune mediated response. And when your immune system reacts, it's typically resulting in some type of inflammatory response. So that's where the allergy, immune, inflammatory process all kind of intersect. But then also realizing that there's different ways that people can respond to a food. So let's talk about dairy. People may say, oh, I can't do dairy. I may have a dairy allergy, or I get, you know, acne, or I get bloating or indigestion when I have dairy. But people, again, can react differently to dairy. So there's actually food intolerances. People may be most familiar with this as it relates to lactose, a sugar that is found in mammalian milk, and that people lack these enzymes that can actually break down the lactose when you ingest it. And if you don't have that enzyme, what happens is it leads to malabsorption or the inability to break it down. It can lead to bloating, gas, and abdominal discomfort and distension. And so from that aspect, it's the inability to break down a component in dairy, the lactose milk. Now, you may have seen that there's things that are marketed such as Lactaid, where it removes the lactose, or you may hear that people can do yogurt or like a fermented kefir, which is a fermented type of probiotic yogurt drink, or even some type of harder cheeses. And again, the yogurts and the cheeses and the kefir, these are fermented, meaning that they are broken down in a way which, one, reduces the amount of lactose content, so they're better able to digest it because it doesn't have the lactose. And two, it also increases the bioavailability, so you can actually absorb and utilize all those nutrients that are in that food. So that's one aspect. There are some people that have lactose intolerance, and I would say the people that typically do better with dairy are those from Northern European descent, as opposed to those from South Asia and Southeast Asian descent, which typically have more prevalence of lactose intolerance. Now, there's also the food allergy we talked about, and that's typically with an allergy. This is an immediate response to a food. We typically, like, let's think about peanuts. Very common that people have peanut allergies, and people may have what is called an anaphylactic response, where their throat starts to close up, their blood pressure drops, their heart rate goes up, and it can be very scary and very dangerous. And so for some people, they may have this immediate reaction to a food. And again, that's a food allergy. And that's different than what is now on the rise. And these are food hypersensitivities, or food sensitivities that you may have heard about. And these are less recognized and acknowledged by allergists and people in the Western medical model. But these are delayed immune responses, but this is an inflammatory response to a food you're consuming. Typically, you're reacting to or responding to the protein that is found in the milk. So that would be something like casein or whey. And what happens is it's a delayed response. So you can actually be responding 24 to 72 hours after consuming that food. And you can have a whole host of reactions to that food that may be hard to pinpoint. Maybe it's bloating, maybe it's diarrhea, maybe it's increased congestion or like post-nasal drip. It could be fatigue, it could be brain fog and difficulty concentrating. It can even be joint pain, muscle aches, rashes, headaches and itchy skins. It's very non-specific symptoms. And so it can be hard to tease out, you know, is it something that I just ate, or is it actually something that I ate 2 or 3 days ago that my body's actually reacting to now? So when it comes to dairy, it can be really tough to figure that out. Do I have an intolerance? Do I have an allergy? Do I have a sensitivity? And also recognizing that quality is super important as well, because cow dairy is different than goat's dairy, and it's different than sheep dairy as well. And if you want, we can go into that too. But I know that was a long-winded answer, but I just kind of wanted to paint this picture that there's a lot of nuances and variability to it, and different people are going to respond differently to the foods. And I also think the quality is an important aspect to address as well.
Well, I think it's important, though, that you spend a little bit of time on that, because we live in a black and white world. So people just like to think like, no, I can't have dairy, I'm allergic. And the way you took time to dice that down right there can help people understand, okay, that's why this one time I had this type of dairy, I didn't feel anything. And maybe when I had this type of dairy, it's awful for me. And starting to be able to tease through those is very, very important for yourself. One thing that you said earlier, it reminded me of like the stock market, like, oh yeah, the carnivore diet's trending right now. It's totally hot because like it has been before and it comes back around, and all these diets just do similar things. They eliminate all the processed junk you talk about. They take out a lot of the allergens amongst these different diets like paleo, keto, whole 30, carnivore, stuff like that. So someone comes to you and they're wanting to start to explore themselves. Could you like talk through a little bit how you might coach a client in approaching their own diet or starting to tease out what is inflammatory or more inflammatory for them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great question. And I think it really depends, again, on the individual and what symptoms they're experiencing. And I think it's also important to acknowledge too and consider when you're making dietary recommendations and if someone's going to be able to tolerate it or not is, are you currently in a heal state or are you in a health optimization state? If you're in a healing state and you have a lot of complex chronic illness or you're not feeling very well, your body's inflamed, well, then it may be advantageous to remove some of these offending factors and some of these more common allergenic and inflammatory foods for a period of time and kind of, you know, adopting this elimination diet to start to pick up on how certain foods may be negatively impacting your health. And I think it can reduce this kind of burden on the body and kind of give it some time to heal as opposed to be chronically reacting to something from your environment in terms of these, you know, foods that are one of those environmental pieces, what you're actually consuming on a daily basis. As opposed to if you're in a health optimization phase and you're really healthy, your body should be able to tolerate a diversity of foods. And so that's where I think a lot more this 80-20 rule comes in, where it's like, you know, I don't eat a lot of dairy, but I can eat it every once in a while in smaller quantities or like more, you know, better quality options. And my body responds just fine. But, you know, if I were to eat a lot of it, maybe my body doesn't respond well. So I think there's also this awareness piece on how my body responds to it. And again, just acknowledging, are you in a heal phase or are you in a health optimization phase? I would also, you know, state that our digestive tract is built toward tolerance, meaning that we should be able to tolerate a diversity of foods. And oftentimes, especially when in the field of naturopathic medicine, you have people coming in to see you on these super restrictive diets, whether it is like a low FODMAP diet, an autoimmune paleo diet, carnivore diet, you know, even an anti-inflammatory diet. Ultimately, the goal would be, how can we actually reintroduce these foods, improve tolerance to these foods, and heal and restore the gut so that you can eat these foods again, even if you weren't able to eat them for maybe a period of 4 weeks to up to 6 months, right? So I think that should always be this mindset of how can we eventually, you know, get to this point of tolerability as opposed to continuously taking foods away, right? We want to be able to add more foods back eventually long-term as opposed to being on this long-term restricted diet for 5-10 years. Now, as opposed to how am I going to make that decision on what that person needs when they come in and see me on that day? You know, I stated this earlier and I know it sounds so simple. And you're probably like, Tyler, we want more of the juice. Like, give me more detail. And honestly, the more I've studied nutrition and I've been on this journey for about 8 years now, and studying all of these different dogmatic diets, whether it is the carnivore or the keto or the paleo or the vegan, is really incorporating and emphasizing wholesome, nutrient-dense food. I think about the average person that is eating a more standard American diet. They're eating a lot of, you know, refined grains and sugars. They're eating a lot of these, you know, foods that come in packaged foods because of this convenience aspect, right? And so I think for any person starting, it's focusing on wholesome foods. And then from there, once you've, you know, eliminated a lot of those refined processed foods, then we can start to kind of individualize a little bit more to you and play around with it. Like if you have more gas and bloating, maybe we should look into, you know, if you get some benefit from a more low FODMAP diet, or if you are, you know, dealing with certain autoimmune conditions like Hashimoto's thyroiditis or multiple sclerosis or Crohn's or colitis, then we can kind of individualize it to you and look at the literature. And again, I will mention that a lot of the literature are limited in terms of studies, and a lot of these are case studies at how diets and specific dietary interventions can be therapeutic to reduce that amount of inflammation going on in the body. But I think first and foremost, it starts with wholesome, nutrient-dense food. Because if you're not starting there, none of that other stuff really matters, in my opinion. And if you look at the common denominator in all of these different diets that you mentioned, Dom, is it really carnivore? Is it really vegan? Is it really paleo? Is it really keto that are leading to all these health improvements when you're looking at it at the literature? Or is it the transition from a standard American diet and eating a highly refined grain and sugar rich diet to a wholesome diet that is more nutrient dense that is what is improving people? And oftentimes, I think that's what's really, you know, accounting for a lot of these larger therapeutic benefits is this approach and movement to a whole foods diet, as opposed to specifically the carnivore approach or specifically the vegan approach. It's a transition to a more whole foods, nutrient dense lifestyle.
I love that. I mean, exactly how you say it in terms of how you practice is what we use for physical therapy, because if you keep it simple, you're more likely to get people to actually start to create change and add things in, rather if it's super complicated, super restrictive. You know, it just it forces someone to be like, I don't know if I could actually sustain this. And 100%. Just, you know, and so you being able to like bring it back and set that foundation, obviously, like, we're going to have you back on, because I know that there's so much more that we could dive in with you in terms of specifics. But, you know, I think a good place for people to start is here and really taking in this information, really observing, building that awareness. And I know that your page on Instagram specifically has so much good information at Functional Food. So guys, go check him out. It's really, I learned so much from it. I'm super grateful you do your lives and you talk so well on your lives and answer so many questions. And the amount of information you're giving for free to build this awareness, Tyler, is really pretty incredible.
Well, thank you, Jen. I do really want to see a change in how we practice medicine and we view health. And I think food is one of those foundational places to start, because you can do all these other things, and if you're not addressing the foundations, I don't think it's going to really make a big difference. And so I think it comes back to, yes, nutrition. And while I found a lot of healing in nutrition, I realize it's not the end all be all. It is a big mover in terms of like its ability to, you know, heal and to transform people's life. But you also have to take account all these other aspects of what I'll call free medicine, whether that's movement, exercise, community, stress reduction, and again, the diet piece, optimizing sleep. I think they're all so important, and it's kind of this tripod analogy. You can't have one without the other. And so looking at how, again, coming back to this aspect of whole foods and seeing how you can incorporate, whether that's more movement, more community, and nourishing yourself and taking care of yourself from this desire to want to, by taking care of yourself, you're going to be able to show up and help other people.
Yeah. I mean, it's the best way for us to fulfill our own purpose is to take the best care we possibly can of ourselves. And I think that the things you're giving now on this podcast and that you spread to the clients and the people that follow you on social media every day is really helping a lot of people do that. And we appreciate being able to have you on. I know you have an anti-inflammatory cookbook, a YouTube channel. Where else can people find you?
Yeah. So I spend most of my time on Instagram at functional.foods. So you can find me there. I am on there basically daily. I'm also on Facebook, eat.functional.foods, kind of a mouthful, but basically same content. But for those that are on Facebook and more familiar with Facebook, you can find me there. I also have been doing interviews with medical experts in their specific fields, whether that's multiple sclerosis, SIBO, cardiovascular disease, neurodegenerative conditions. I have interviews there that you can check out. And then I created about a year ago an anti-inflammatory recipe ebook, because I did realize, like, while knowledge and education is one piece that we were talking about earlier in this podcast, people also need the tangible aspect that how can I take this knowledge and integrate it into everyday living and cooking that is affordable, is fun, approachable, but also tastes good, right? Because food, there's more to food than just, you know, nourishment. There's an emotional attachment to it. There's a community and, you know, connection aspect to food, but also it's tasty. There's, you know, a lot of what dictates our dietary choices is what tastes good. So I kind of bring it from this lens of removing a lot of these common inflammatory foods and really incorporating a lot of nutrient density. So people have everyday recipes that they can do for breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, desserts, whatever that is, and reap the benefits of an anti-inflammatory diet without feeling restricted and deprived by eliminating some of these foods that can be more problematic.
Yes. I'm so excited for everyone to go check it out and maybe hopefully have you back on one day. But thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Tyler. Truly, you're doing some incredible work. Even as a student, I can't wait to see what you do when you've graduated. And we're very grateful for you.
Well, thank you, Jen. And thank you, Dom, for your time. It has been a pleasure. And I'm so grateful that we're able to connect this year.
And there we have it, yet another amazing guest on the Optimal Body Podcast. So now what we ask of you, if you loved any bit of that or resonated with it, go share it out, share it with a friend, share it on your social media, because you know there are more people out there that would resonate with it just the same. Also, subscribe, rate, review on your favorite podcast app so we know what you want to learn or other guests that you think we should bring on for you in the future. Keep tuning in to find your optimal body.